Hello, everyone. This is Mike Hawkins, the CFO for MSIG. We will begin the conference call in about 3 minutes. We will begin the conference call in 2 minutes. We will begin the conference call in 1 minute. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the MSIG Inc. Shareholders Conference Call. My name is Mike Hawkins, the Chief Financial Officer, moderator, speaker for this conference call. Before we begin, let me take the time to thank everyone for joining us and thank you for your interest in our company. Hopefully today we can shed some light onto where we've come from and where we're going. Please note that all phones are currently on mute and will remain on mute throughout the call. The call is limited to a number of minutes available, and we've got a lot we want to share with you. We have asked our shareholders to share the questions with us, and a lot of you have responded. We will address as many of those questions we can during the shareholder update at the conclusion of my brief introduction. If we don't get to your question that you've submitted, rest assured, we will respond to your question after the call. If during the call you have a question you wish to ask and we have a chance to address it, you will need to send it to info@msig.org, and we have the opportunity to get to it, we will address that question. Before we get started, though, there are some things the attorneys are going to require me to tell you guys. So let's get that reading over with, and then we'll get into our shareholder update. Any statements I make that do not describe historical facts may constitute forward-looking statements, as that term is defined in the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Any forward-looking statements are made based on current expectations but are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties. The factors that could cause actual future results to differ materially from current expectations include, but are not limited to, risk and uncertainties relating to the company's ability to develop, market, and sell products based on its technology, the expected benefits and efficacy of the company's products and technology, the availability of substantial additional funding for the company's continuous operations and to conduct research and development and future product commercialization, and the company's business, research, product development, regulatory approval, marketing and distribution plans and strategies. Throughout the discussion today, when I speak of certain financial disclosures, they may be non-GAAP disclosures, for example, EBITDA, which consists of earnings before interest, depreciation, taxes, and amortization. These terms, as the company defines them, may not be comparable to similarly titled measures used by other companies and is not a measure of performance presented in accordance with GAAP. The company uses these terms as a measure of operating performance. These terms should not be considered as a substitute to the information contained in the financial statements, the 8-Ks, the Form 10-Qs, and the Form 10-Ks the company has filed. So let's get started. During today's call, there's three basic areas, and I'm an outline kind of person, so I'm going to spell this for you out in an outline for those of you who wish to take notes for future reference. There's three basic things I want to talk about. I want to talk about some of the new transactions that has affected the company recently. I want to talk about the new business model and concepts, our vertical and horizontal growth strategies, and finally, I want to discuss the financial conditions of the company. In no particular order, let's first talk about the recent transactions. There's four recent transactions the company has made in the last few months that we believe have a positive impact on the company and will have a positive impact on the company for many years to come. The most obvious and recent event was when the company acquired the VitaSig business. This seemed right at so many levels. Management was extremely pleased with this outcome. Not only do we now have VitaSig back into the fold of MSIG, where we can cut the cost, stop the bleeding of cash to support that operation with no near future hope of seeing a return of that money, we have expanded our investment portfolio. I cannot speak to VitaSig's past performance until such time as that information has been released to the public, but based upon the recent announcements and the recent 8-Ks filed by VitaSig and us, the shareholder doesn't need to look far to see the obvious benefits. Acquiring a $3.95 million MOQ contract, minimum order quantity contract, will see an immediate impact on our financial statements and the strength of our company. But the two things that the company benefits from this transaction that aren't so obvious is the transformation of the what's entitled due to MSIG account on their books, basically as a 46% owner at the time, being an insider, we were funding that company. It was treated as a long-term payable. The odds of getting that paid back could have been difficult to achieve. It's now more likely we will get paid back. The note, the due to MSIG account has been converted into a promissory note with a definitive short-term deadline for payment, which will bring additional cash into the business. The company believes that the new business in VitaSig, Inc., they haven't changed their name yet. The disclosure has been made of Malcom Pharmacy. Is much more valuable, and that once awareness has been achieved, the value of our investment, we believe, will be actualized. Should we maintain approximately a 10% interest in this new business operation. We can elect to sell our position and fund our company probably for many years to come off of this one investment. Or we can continue to hold that investment as the company begins to mature and grow. On top of all that, in getting to continue to own the investment in Malcon, to seeing a definitive date on the return of capital we have put into VitaSig, as well as bringing in those contracts into MSIG's account, there's still direct value provided to the shareholders of MSIG who were issued shares during the spinoff, and they are now in a much stronger position in that particular company, and we believe that the value of their shares will increase. We see this as a win for everybody. The second event was when the company incorporated Scalable Solutions, Inc. in March of this year. We entered into our first construction contract in January. As we begin to grow, the opportunity began to take form, and we recognized the need for looking at this particular industry with a more direct intention. We currently have 4 contracts. They're all underway, and we have several in the pipeline which we are looking to close. As these deals unfold, we'll continue to make our shareholders aware of the status and what the benefits to the company will be. One of the reasons why I was brought into the business was because of my history, in particularly in the modular construction industry business. I have a background in that. In 1998, I presented to the United Nations to 47 different countries on the global housing crisis around the world and the use of this rapid construction technology to provide solutions in the housing markets. It's that same technology that we are utilizing to grow and to construct these greenhouses, these grow facilities, and we're utilizing that expertise to manage that particular industry. We've recently updated our shareholders on a particular contract with Greenleaf Holdings. We are hosting an event there in July 15th. Our shareholders are more than welcome to attend. We ask that a RSVP be sent to the company. It's not required, but in order for us to prepare adequately, we would prefer if the shareholders would let us know that they intend to be there. It would be greatly appreciated. But the company's approach is to design, build contracts. You know, to understand what we did with Greenleaf, we design and build contracts in a prepaid cost-plus basis. This is virtually unheard of in the industry, where you're identifying what the cost of it is, you're getting prepaid for it, and you're building in a percentage of profit. While you can look at construction, and construction is one of those deals where there's no hedging your bet of making a greater profit for reduction of cost if you can figure out how to do things cheaper. Construction is typically a very direct, finite cost. And whenever you can get into a contract where you've got no risk in loss in construction and you've got a percentage of profitability built into it, and you're being prepaid to do that, where you're reconciling at the end of every month what your actual cost was to what you were prepaid, it's a very good deal. All our agreements, the customers pay in advance. We have no cost of money for these projects built in. As such, our bottom line is our bottom line. There are no hidden fees, we maintain full disclosure with our customers. There's nothing hidden from them. They see exactly what the cost is and what our profits are. We show them actual cost, add in the agreed-upon profit and management fees, reconcile the advancements made monthly. Now, in the particular case of Greenleaf, we decided they could provide us some more marketing and promotional expertise that we think is critical to the spreading of the MCIG name and awareness across the globe. So we believe that there was some promotional expertise that they could help us in our long term. We've elected to convert some of that profits into a project on our quid pro quo exchange of services. These are services, had they paid us the profit on this project, we would have expended to develop this marketing and promotion anyways, because we need to do that. The third thing is that many folks have inquired about the status of Rollies. The company is pleased to announce that it designed, developed, and acquired its first machine for Rollies. Representatives of the companies have spent the last several months working with our choice manufacturer in producing the machines so that we can begin this adventure. The company's in discussions with dispensaries in Nevada and Massachusetts, which is considering as its alpha site to roll out these services. The business model is very simple. Our machines will allow a dispensary to cut its cost in half by reproducing or by producing a resellable marijuana cigarette. Currently, the process is archaic. Dispensaries hire folks to come in and roll the cigarettes by hand. There's no guarantee of measurement or quality of production. Our machines will cut their cost in half while giving them predefined parameters that they can set to have definable measuring metrics in order to produce the same quality product every time. With the average dispensary selling as many as 1,000 units per day in Nevada, it's kind of where we're looking at starting, it's quick to see what the benefits are. In order to provide a wider service target, though, the company requires a license. The only way of implementing this project right now is to physically lug the machine to the dispensaries and make the units on site. With the proper licensing and facility, a better solution is available. The company is continuing to look for a partnership in which a license can be shared to expand the services and its potential. We are still modeling several different variations of the services we intend to offer, and we look forward to the day that we can finally roll out this service to the population, to the public. The fourth recent event, which will be more readily defined in the upcoming Form 10-K scheduled for release in July, is the compartmentalization of our business elements. We've discussed two elements already, Rollies and Scalable Solutions. There's two other compartments I wish to address, as we believe they will have a long-lasting impact on the company and its business. The first is Internet sales. The company has witnessed tremendous growth in internet sales, but the market is still in its infancy and there's plenty of room to grow in this market. We have a dedicated team working to enhance our internet presence, advance our market penetration in both our own proprietary blends and products, as well as a retailer of some of the most popular products out there. By consolidating all internet sales under one umbrella, we are capable of cutting costs, picking up on trends quicker, and improving our customer base and customer service. We believe this consolidation will make us a leader in the internet sales of production of products in our industry. We will be prepared for the rapidly changing playing field quickly and exact. The second area of compartmentalization I want to talk about is our intellectual property. The company is determined to protect and preserve its intellectual properties. We intend to protect it in two ways. The first is to separate the intellectual properties from the basic operations, which may leave vulnerable to potential litigation in the future. This is relatively a standard practice which the company is incorporating. The second is through national and international registrations and laws. For example, the company is aware that a former manager of VitaSig, while acting as the CEO of that publicly traded entity, filed an assignment with the USPTO granting the rights to certain trademarks in his own personal company. The company is aware that an alleged document was used as part of that filing. The company does not believe this document to be authentic. The company is expecting an opinion of counsel in this particular matter and will address the issue in the very near future. It is interesting to note that this mark has not yet been granted and is contested. Furthermore, the company believes that even if the mark is granted, it would be unenforceable against the company as the company had prior knowledge and use of the mark. And finally, the mark has been issued in the European theater to our partner as required of our expansion into that theater. That's a lot of graphs, and I hope that I haven't lost anyone yet. We still have a couple more categories that I want to talk about. So let's talk about what's new and on the horizon of MSIG. It's important to note that the company has developed a vertical and horizontal approach to strategic business growth. There are elements in this particular industry where MSIG is well-positioned, well-known. Our acquisition of Vapolutions a year ago and VitaSig are reflections on how we intend to grow horizontally, expanding our roots deeper into the market that have been our bread and butter for the past year. We have seen tremendous growth in this market and will continue to dig our roots deeper into the market. But all this has brought forth a couple of issues that we've had to address. We had to deal with the bank and merchant services decisions to consider how we process payments. This created a huge downturn in the third quarter of this fiscal year. You saw the difference between the second and the third quarter earnings, and there was a tremendous drop-off. Part of this was because of the inability to process with merchant services. We have corrected that. We have moved forward with that, and we have created a solution whereby we can continue and did continue to offer our products online with the capability of processing with banks and with our merchant services accounts. But we also are looking to expand horizontally our services into new markets. We have a clear path in front of us for ending the cultivation and grow. We're going to continue to look at that opportunity. We have several that are potential expansions, and we're studying the viability. When this time is right and the right opportunity is there, we are positioned to take advantage of it and move into this sector. With the issues that we've learned from the merchant services side and other issues that have popped up of the opportunity for additional services in this particular industry, and we are looking at solutions that we can offer to help others avoid the pitfalls that we've been victim to over the last year. We have a good game plan for strategic growth. We've discussed our most recent transactions and provided some insight into management's thoughts and desires on how best to move forward. But like I said, we dealt with some setbacks. Nothing is ever always rosy. There are two setbacks the company wishes to inform its shareholders of. Everyone has read the financial statements and should have noticed the drop in the sales. We discussed the version as it moves more into the mainstream. We expect the burden to be tampered and dwindle for this merchant services issue. Very few banks, virtually none in the U.S., that are FDIC insured will process payments for products in this industry. Most companies have had to look internationally for processing power and have faced with massive reserves, lengthy delays in payment transfers, and high cost of money. That's if they can find someone to process their payments. This hasn't been helped by the high industry rate of fraudulent credit card transactions. But we've managed to navigate that minefield, and we have a strong position, but it took us a while to overcome. We believe that our solution has created another opportunity for us to explore, and we are exploring it. The second setback was the failure of one of our prime contracts to fail to meet its obligations it was contractually bound to fulfill. The company is still addressing the issue and hopes to resolve the differences. But even with these minor setbacks, the company remains viable and strong. Let's discuss today's announcements and the financial conditions of the company. The company's financial condition is overall strong. The announcement today of our earnings and revenue demonstrates the company's continued progression. We are trending favorably. With revenues up over 200% and costs curbed over 200%, this continued path will lead to profitability. There are two specific items I wish to discuss with the shareholders concerning the financial growth of the business. I will remind everyone that our numbers disclosed are unaudited. We are in the audit process right now. We intend to release these audited numbers on schedule and file the Form 10-K as required. The first point that must be made is that the company has no toxic debt. There are no financial pitfalls that could see the shareholders lose their value in this business. No one can foreclose on the business. Many early-stage companies survive off toxic debt, and 90% of those end up being owned by the debt holders or liquidated, depriving the shareholders of any compensation or even a partial payback of their invested dollars. Management has been able to eliminate these risks to our shareholders while continuing to grow the business. A simple mathematical equation says when your sales grow at a greater percentage than your margin of profit, you require cash to maintain operations. The company has been able to secure equitable positions to cover this growth without relying on toxic debt. Not all debt is toxic, and at some point, the company may choose to enter into a debt instrument, but only when there is a viable and strategic reason to do so. The company will not borrow to survive. We don't need to. We don't need to put our shareholders at risk for that, and we won't. The company virtually cash flows its operations. The main source of losses for the company has been stock-based compensation. The company has decreased stock-based compensation by two-thirds year over end. The company is currently considering the implementation of a stock option plan that will virtually eliminate stock-based compensation and tie performance of employees and the company together. We believe this will have an immediate and dramatic effect on the company's performance from a financial perspective. So as a recap, we've got to talk about some of the recent transactions. We have talked about management's philosophy and new events in the company, and we have talked about the financial viability. Now to some of the questions. When we asked the shareholders to provide us questions, we were fortunate to get quite a few responses. And like I said, I'm not going to have time to go over all the questions. Those that I don't have the opportunity to get to, I will personally address them to you and respond to your questions. The first question asks, why the shareholder call? Why now? Interesting question. Why not now? I can't speak for the past decisions of management prior to me becoming the interim CFO for the business. And I don't think I'd want to anyways. I want to focus on the company going forward. It's important that our shareholders are well informed. The more our base is informed, the higher the probability of our shares' value being reflective of our actual value will be achieved. So we're going to continue to offer these shareholder updates on a quarterly basis. Next question. Question is, one of the greatest assets to any organization is its people. It seems hard to retain key personnel at MSIG. How is the company addressing this issue? Once again, I thank you guys for sending in these questions. There are some really tough questions to address. And key management people is one of them. But retaining quality people, I don't think it's just an MSIG problem in this particular market. It's a problem across the board. But I'm not going to look back, but looking forward, we believe key personnel will continue to be added as we grow. We continue to look for strong leadership. When we got a good staff member, we try and keep them. I, for one, I am the interim CFO. My agreement expires in September. If I meet the qualifications of strong leadership, then hopefully I'll be extended on a more permanent basis. But only time will tell if I measure up to what's needed in this particular company. No one in the organization will be able to rest on its laurels. We task our management team to lead and produce. We have a fiduciary responsibility to our shareholders, and we will do everything we can to increase their value. And if you can't do it, then you'll get replaced. Those who don't perform and understand this fiduciary responsibility or are self-serving will be gone. The next question, how can you justify the company paying 900,000 shares in NSIC stock to an employee that has done absolutely nothing to improve the value of the company? This question's personally directed right at me, and I sincerely hope I earn it. As I've discussed in the initial discussion, we're looking at an employee stock option plan that bears little cost in the company and ties performance directly to awards, so that any dilutive effect of issuing stock to its employees overcome by that value brought by that individual. Next question. Late filings seem to be commonplace. Will there be a point in time where on-time filings can be expected? It is management's intention to file everything on time, every time. Sometimes mitigating circumstances and third-party requirements prevent it. But we're going to continue to strive to meet the deadlines and file as a company and do better and ensure that we hit our requirements. Next question. Keys to the successes of a lot of businesses is the focus on mergers and acquisitions. What, if any, focus is being considered on this front? Now, this question was actually asked before our most recent announcement. I think our most recent announcement actually answers this question. I also addressed this in my initial thoughts. We will continue, though, to consider mergers and acquisitions as a strategic tool available to us. Of course, we've got to be cautious about this. There are issues, from a financial perspective, that we have to be cognizant of when we look at mergers and acquisitions. For example, during last year's audit, the company was impaired its position in Vapolution, which is a company that we own 100% of and treat as an investment. While this impairment had an immediate bad effect on the financials, as we had to write off $625,000 invested, the acquisition is still considered by management a good acquisition. We just didn't quite do it the way we should have done it. With the expansion of new products, participation in multiple trade shows of Vapolutions, we got high hopes this investment will prove to provide benefits to the company going forward. But we used that lesson learned in how we dealt with VitaSig in this most recent acquisition, which is why the $3.95 million in MOQ contracts is considered an off-book asset. We fully disclose it. We let everybody know that these contracts exist, but we treat them as an off-balance sheet transaction so that it doesn't reflect either positively or negatively going forward. It's the viability of how we operate and deliver on those contracts that will be measured towards the success going forward, not some theoretical application from a financial perspective we have to bookkeep. What are the long-term plans and goals of the company? Good question. Our intent is to grow vertically and horizontally. We want to become better at what we do best, and we want to be the industry leader. We want to be positioned to step in during the changing times, providing our services to those that need to navigate the waters of change and to expand into new markets. That's our goal. What's our new mission and vision statement is the next question. These two questions kind of go hand in hand with each other. The company's goal and visions are very clear to management and hopefully have been well defined throughout this conference call. The company has not adopted a new mission statement or vision at this time. We are still committed to being a diversified company servicing the legal cannabis, hemp, and CBD markets. We will address the adoption of a mission statement and vision statement in the very near future. The next question is, where can we corroborate all of those contracts that Paul said are on the works of being worked by MC? Validation of contracts comes through performance on the financial statements. We make public disclosures of all contracts that are material to the company. The SEC is very specific on what requires filing with an 8K. Some we can elect to file those contracts on an 8K as well, provided it doesn't violate confidentiality. So it's kind of a difficult thing, other than the disclosures we make, to collaborate or corroborate. But rest assured that our third-party independent auditors are provided copies of every contract that we do. Our audited financial statements and public filings via 8K, 10Qs, 10Ks corroborate our contracts. Next question. If a bank is willing to lend $1 million, it would prove to stockholders that the business is really good, since finance will have to be verified by a third party. Are you considering to open a line of credit? At this time, the company has no intentions of opening a line of credit. We have no desire to take on any toxic debt. We would never borrow $1 million for the sake of borrowing $1 million to prove viability. If the time comes and we need an independent line of credit to expand our business operations, then we will look at it and do so at that time. Next question. Are we staying with the current accounting company, or as always, will it change after reporting? We have no intentions of changing our auditing firm. There's nothing in the works of that change. Next question. When will MSIG be profitable? The company currently cash flows its operations. The trend seemed to indicate, from a financial reporting perspective, that profitability is achievable in our very near future. But it's relative. We believe we are profitable. Our revenues are growing, and our assets are appreciating. We're doing more out there than our competitors are. Next question. When will we get the share price higher? And this seems to be on the minds of all the shareholders, and that's what everybody wants an answer to. Unfortunately, the bottom line is the company doesn't control the share price. We strongly believe our stock is currently undervalued. We will continue to grow the business and focus on the things that bring wealth to our shareholders. We trust the market will eventually catch up and take notice of what we as management are doing with the success of the company. Next question, in line with this, it says, MSIG keeps investing heavily in new products and seems like a very strong company. It seems the stock is stuck between 3 and 4 cents a share. Why is the stock not raising? As I just stated, the company doesn't control the stock price. We strongly believe we are way undervalued. There seems to be a lot of negativity right now in this particular sector as a whole. We believe the industry will see some major changes, though, in the very near future, and these changes will have a positive effect on the company's stature. Meanwhile, we'll continue to focus on the business and bring wealth to our shareholders. That's what we can do, is grow the business. Now, I do notice that, you know, there seems to be a lot of, message boards. I personally don't go to them. I get advice on them every once in a while, but there seems to be, some points of cyberbullying and stuff that happens on the message boards. Now, we recently learned that one of our competitors has taken on this tactic of going in there and speaking bad about the company as a way to thwart our shareholder interest. Once again, you know, we don't give much credence to that. We won't participate in that. We believe that ultimately in the end, if we continue to do the business and grow the business, the shareholder value will correct itself. Next question. Will there be a stock split in MSIG near its future? There's no plans of a stock split. The only way we would consider a stock split would be if we were entertaining an uplist, you know, to the NASDAQ, or we were looking at some type of multi-million-dollar capital raise. But none of that is in the plans. It's not needed. We're cash flow positive. We're growing our business both vertically and horizontally. A stock split has not been entertained at all in company discussions. So the next question kind of goes in line with that. It says, what steps are being taken to list the company on a credible stock exchange such as NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange? Now, we're positioned for such a move and we'll continue to keep the company in a readiness state. You know, we have no debt. We're well positioned to do that. The decision to uplist, though, we need to take into account the cost of that, the current revenues, the percentage of profitability we have, the share price that we're currently at. And there's a lot of other mitigating circumstances. Management's going to make a decision if it's best to try to move up on a different platform. We always continue to look at those opportunities, and as the company grows, when it's deemed viable to make that move, we'll make the move. Next question. What effect, if any, will the new regulations have on the company? MSIG currently does not cross the green line. Our services are related to lifestyle products and CBD brands, construction build-outs, management and services. We're insulated from the market and legal changes as they relate to cannabis and CBD. Furthermore, we're a global company with reach into 5 continents. We will continue to expand our business internationally to offset any potential regulations within the USA that might stymie growth temporarily. And I believe this is the last question that we're going to address. It's been 41 minutes, and we were limited to a 45-minute call. So the last question I will address, once again, if I've not addressed your questions, I will do so at the end of the call. You will hear back from us, and I apologize for not being able to address your question today. The last question was, how do you see the DEA reschedule of marijuana will affect the top line? If the DEA reschedules cannabis, there will be an enormous need for the services like the one that MSIG provides to help the industry with expansion. We feel we're in a better position than most as we carry no debt and are revenue producing, while getting into the verticals like construction that stand to benefit the most from a favorable ruling. So in a nutshell, we believe that we positioned ourselves to move forward with the decisions that are being made, and that we can navigate either way or any way that the legislation goes. Thank you for participating in the shareholder call. If you have any questions, feel free to contact us at info@mcig.org. We look forward to the next phone call. We will have a shareholder update call in 3 months. Thank you, and have a good evening.